Welcome to The Geek in Review, the podcast focused on innovative and creative ideas in the legal industry. I'm Marlene Gebauer.
And I'm Greg Lambert.
So this week we're talking with MC Sangaila of the Porsche Project. And this was actually recorded, you know, a few weeks ago because MC reached out to us and said, hey, I'm going to have my 100th episode coming up and can we do a pod? And we said, sure. So we were really excited to have her on and we're really excited about her 100th episode. So congratulations to her.
Yeah. So, and she does great work in reaching out to a lot of women that are on the, that are members of the bar, members of the bench, and just members of the legal community. So we were really happy to be there when she launched the project and now that she's hit her 100th episode.
We'd like to welcome back MC Sangaila, appellate attorney and host of the podcast, The Porsche Project, which is scheduled to celebrate its 100th episode during Women's History Month in March. The Porsche Project focuses on women in traditional and non-traditional legal careers. MC, welcome back to The Geek in Review and congratulations on the 100th episode.
Thank you so much for having me. I really am enjoying being back because yours was the very first podcast I did about the podcast. So it makes sense in my mind to come full circle and be here.
Well, that's awesome.
Glad we stayed on your radar as you have been working your tail off to get all these episodes out. So
you're making us look bad,
MC. So
keep doing that, though.
For listeners who may not have heard the podcast or our prior interview with you, would you just mind giving us a little bit of the background and reasoning on why you wanted to start this podcast?
Yeah, I initially had focused on a book project with regard to women appellate judges and justices in the U.S. I had noticed as an appellate lawyer that there weren't as many women on the appellate bench as I had expected to see by this point in history, about 120, that's state and federal appellate levels. And so I thought I would highlight them, talk about their career trajectories in a book format. And so I started interviewing them for that. But along the way, I realized that they really enjoyed talking. They just loved to go on the phone and talk about their stories. And a lot of that was lost in translation once you put it down in a formal setting of a book. And so I wasn't really sure. I thought the project was still good, but I wasn't sure it was the right format for the project. So I set it aside for a bit. And then COVID happened. Everybody got online. Everybody listened to podcasts. Judges became familiar with Zoom and how to do remote everything. And so that is where it started. I went, okay, maybe we could do a podcast with judges. So if they're willing to talk to me, that's what I'll do. That's how it started in the podcast format.
Now remind me, on some of the judges that you had interviewed for the book, did you go back to some of the same ones and re-interview them for the podcast?
Yeah, some of them I did. Some of them I did not. Some had retired, some weren't available. So for the ABA, there are some published essays that I did that were going to be originally for the book that are out there. And then some did participate again by podcast. But the idea was to celebrate them, but also inspire other women to consider applying, since I thought you need to apply to have more women. So maybe we'll get more women interested in doing this. And one of the ideas behind that was that we often, as women, tend to apply when we have checked off every box of what we think is required for the criteria. And sometimes people have a sense, particularly about the bench, that there is one path. And if you haven't followed that path, like if you weren't a prosecutor, if you didn't clerk for federal judges, if you didn't do various things, you just shouldn't bother applying. And the truth of the matter is that there's a lot of different paths, some very circuitous paths to the bench, and they're not uniform. Also, that a lot of women early on, the first women judges and first women appellate judges, really had a lot of barriers that we no longer face. So I also thought it was an interesting way of kind of a microcosm of women's progress in the profession. And there's a certain level of, you know, you can do it. If there are women who ended up being chief justices of their state Supreme Courts, and they started out like Ruth Bader Ginsburg or Sandra Day O'Connor, in a situation where women, you know, they just couldn't be hired in a legal role or they were rejected from those roles, then you say, hey, things are a lot better now. I certainly don't have that situation, and I can definitely accomplish at least as much as they did starting out, you know, with a running start compared to them.
Yeah, so you've interviewed people with a bunch of different types of experiences, but also there's a huge range of different courts that these folks work at. So, I mean, can you tell us a little bit about, like, the types of courts that you're looking at for the podcast?
Yeah, so I started with the kernel with the idea of the appellate judges and focusing on them. But then as the beauty of the
people
podcast
got interested format, though, right?
yeah. Well, and the beauty of the podcast format is you can evolve as you're going. So it's not like a book, like I agreed to publish a book on X and I can't change it, you know, because that's what the publisher agreed to. So when I started doing it, people would refer me, the initial guests would refer me to other people. Sometimes they weren't judges. I thought, well, those are valuable stories to tell also. And then I thought, if I were a law student now, and I remember my time as a law student, that I didn't really know all the career options that were available from a law degree. This would also be a way of showcasing the way that women are leading across the industry, outside the industry, and also sort of a career touchstone for those in law school to explore different things they could do with their law degree. So we have people who are in legal nonprofits, people who lead museums, writers, just a whole array, general counsel, managing partners of law firms, solo practitioners who started their own firms, people who are now executive coaches who were in-house counsel or lawyers before. There's just academics, deans of law schools, just a whole range of people. And it really is kind of a snapshot of where women are leading inside and outside the profession right now.
And I think it's an important stories to be told there. So,
You mentioned too, Marlene, I didn't mean to ignore your question. You asked about the courts too. And so there's a range of courts. I started with appellate courts. I started with state courts, federal courts. And then I started thinking also about how you become a judge. Are you elected or appointed? And that varies state by state. So I thought, well, if you think you might want to be a judge in your area, you better know how to do that. And then I started thinking about other kinds of judges, magistrate judges in the federal system, trial court judges of all different stripes in the state and federal courts. So I expanded a little bit because I thought if you wanted to be a judge at some other level, you might want to hear about that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So in September of last year, the podcast was a Recorder finalist for the California Legal Award for Innovation in Diversity and Inclusion. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
I know you had some very stiff competition, and can you share with us what that experience was like?
Yeah, I was really glad. I was encouraged to apply by various people, and I'm glad that I did since we were a finalist. And we're the only really individual-generated project or a podcast project that was on there. So I kind of feel like not only it represents to me a shift in the ability to make a difference, that you can create your own platform to make a difference. The other finalists were more traditional partnerships between public interest organizations and law firms. Is something where they partnered on projects together that were more institutional based. But here we have, you know, an impact with a bunch of individuals, a collective coming together, their collective stories have impact. And then the platform, you know, was created by one person on a podcast. And also we've done a lot of partnerships with other people. So we had a partnership with Girls Inc. and we did a program with their high school girls, 11th graders who were in a workforce training program. And we had local women judges, law professors, lawyers come and present to them. And so the girls who were there had this one-on-one relationship building. Some of them later went to watch the judges in action in their courtroom. It was just a really great relationship building opportunity. But then the effort that all of those women made to come there and do that one day was amplified by the podcast. So now any high school girl in Girls Inc. or not can listen to that program on the podcast recording. So that sense of creating community from the podcast and then bridging towards traditional groups, I think that's one of the powers of the new medium as well. There's a lot of different ways to work with it.
Yeah, it does give you kind of an outreach when you have a topic that you're really inspired by, motivated by. It's good to have this platform out there that wasn't around a couple of decades ago. So
yeah, you can get other people excited about it too.
Yeah, and if it's a win-win for the organization, like Girls Inc., it doesn't cost Girls Inc. anything to do that, and then you're amplifying the work of the organization too. So I think there's a win-win for both.
Yeah. Yep. You know, when we talked to you, I think it was last March, almost a year ago. Again, and you kind of mentioned this, that you were pretty focused on the judiciary. You've gone into the process of how to get into the judiciary, but you've also kind of expanded even beyond that. And I see you've had people like Aaron Levine on for legal tech guru out there.
Yep.
You've had others on that weren't necessarily in the judiciary. What have been some of your favorites that were not judges that you've had on the show?
Oh, gosh. Okay, so yes, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I also want to be moving forward into the future about what kind of things are on the horizon. I feel like we have the very traditional setting, the judicial setting, but then there's innovations in law itself that I'm not sure people would otherwise know about or be familiar with. I also think there's a huge story in the legal tech founders. There are not that many women, but the women who are in it are young. They are recent, law school graduates. They've been maybe 10 years out, many of them. And they decide to drop the firm and, start with their product and their company. I think there's something to learn from them in having that kind of confidence in doing that. At the same time, there's a little bit of a sad aspect to it, because part of that is because they felt that there were limitations within law firms and they'd rather just start their own deal from the beginning. It's hard, but I'd rather do that. There's more space for me to gain influence by starting my own company, my own product. So there's sort of a double-edged sword to those stories. But their work is amazing. I think their leadership is amazing, and it's something that people should know about. So yeah, you mentioned Aaron Levine from Hello Divorce. Also Camilla Lopez from PeopleClerk will be coming up, and Noella Sudbury from Raza out of Utah, which works on expunging criminal records. Yeah, there's a range of them. I'll also have a show about legal design. So with some legal design innovators from really all around the world, largely from Europe.
That seems to be where it's focused right
it
now.
It seems like where it goes. Yep. Yeah, Astrid Pohlmeier and Tess Manuela and Sarah Weiss. So that's another one. And then, of course, I had Jackie Schaefer from ClearBrief and Nicole Clark from Trellis and Dorna Moyney from Documate, who now are like, the senior leaders in the space at, 32 or something like that. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So it's been neat to do that, to think ahead and where, because I think about that in terms of if you're in law school now, that's actually a career path to think about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which you wouldn't have thought about that years ago.
Exactly.
And one of my favorites, and we were talking about this prior to the recording starting, is Deborah Hensler at Stanford, and just the fact that she's a PhD and not a JD. But how she has made just a large impact in legal and analysis and all of the things that she did at RAND. I like the fact that it's, you've kind of spread out the spectrum of who you're bringing in a little bit, because there's some really interesting women out there that aren't necessarily directly, not the result of a traditional lawyer type transition.
Yes.
It's really interesting. If anyone hasn't heard that one with Deborah Hensler, I highly suggest that. That was a really fun interview.
Yeah, she's really interesting. I mean, she's to be a woman leader at RAND when there weren't many, and then to really shape the Institute for Civil Justice that's at RAND, and then her work. Yeah, as you mentioned, Greg, I think there's a common thread amongst the stories, which is, you know, there's not a straight path to things, and it's kind of circuitous, and that's okay. That's kind of how life goes. And then also that each person, you can see all of the different experiences and like there's their particular skills and the building blocks that make them leads to where they are. Like, I don't think anybody else except Deborah Hensler could have put together, you know, her training, her PhD training, her training in policy work and asking questions and interviewing people about empirically what's going on together with legal analysis in a way that she is now shaping and ahead of the curve in terms of legal trends globally. That's something only Deborah could do. It's the same way with a lot of people on this, that you see it's magic when you learn their stories and you can see all the threads coming together, you know, like in a quilt. And you're like, wow, that it all makes sense. And it's perfect when somebody is in their sweet spot of doing what they do best and where they can contribute the most and have the most meaning. That's really nice to see. And I hope that in itself is inspiring, not just the particular ways that people are making a difference, but how you can architect a career that is perfect for you and that can be different. I think that law school kind of puts you on, here's this one path, and if you don't follow that path, you're screwed. You're never going to succeed. You got to have this, this, and this. And once you've passed it, there's no hope for you, you know? And that's not at all the stories of these people. And in fact, maybe you have to take a little detour to find out what makes you special and what you contribute compared to somebody else.
Yeah, just in one of my book reading groups, we just finished the book Range, and basically how experimentation in different areas and being a generalist is generally a better way to go than sort of just having a laser focus in terms of the type of career you have. So I think that reflects on that people seem to be more willing, women seem to be more willing to sort of try different things and sort of have alternative paths rather than sort of what the traditional expectation is.
Yeah, I was listening to that. I'm thinking about Ashley Heard. You know, Ashley Heard, who's quite popular on TikTok, really built her business. Coming from in-house counsel at some major companies to her own company called Manager Method, which really focuses on training managers, filling in the gap in HR and legal compliance training. And, you know, there's so much about her that I'm like, only Ashley could do this. Like, her particular empathy for people and understanding, wanting to understand where each person comes from and trying to find a middle, at least some understanding so people don't treat each other with no sense of, well, why would you be doing that? There's some kind of motivation for that. Just so many things you see. And it's just, I just think it's beautiful and magical to see when people maximize their potential. And that's kind of what I see in some of the guests. And it's nice to see like ultimate humanity, like the best they could be and applying it in the most meaningful way.
Yeah. I do want to flip the question a little bit too, because you also, I liked what you mentioned, is that you recognized a lot of what's happening is people are trying new things, but they're walking away from the practice of law because they're not feeling that's going to be a successful path for them, that women are doing this. And that is a theme that we have brought up here on the podcast, and we've had guests that talked about that. And so I was wondering if you have thoughts about that, if your guests have shared thoughts about that, because really the legal profession is really losing some talented people because they're not offering a path for success.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the interviews show that, and the podcast episodes show that there's a range. There's still, I mean, there are women who are leading, you know, major law firms who, like Barb Dawson, who's the incoming chairperson of Snell & Wilmer, Kalpana Srinivasan, who's the co-managing partner of Sussman Godfrey. There are a lot of women who are succeeding in traditional venues, and that works for them. I think the story is that to open your eyes to other things that you could potentially consider and to assess what is success for you. And what is success for you could be different at different points in your career. I think that there's this one-size-fits-all kind of model and expectation, and that needs to be busted a little bit, because there are a lot of other ways to succeed and to contribute the most you can contribute.
Before we get to the next question, I want to ask, what's your puppy's name?
Yeah, sorry about that. There are three puppies.
Oh!
There's an 85-pound puppy, and then there are little puppies.
Podcast puppies. The podcast puppies.
Yes, the podcast puppies. That's right.
Mm-hmm. I can join Pod Dog on the call.
Yeah.
She's being very quiet right now, though.
Oh, good for her. Yeah.
She's chilling.
It's almost like they know, you know, on, and they go, oh, this is the time.
They can feel it. They can feel it.
No, mine knows I'm on, and that's when she barks. So it's like, I want to be heard. I want to be heard.
Yeah.
Well, MC, I know 100 episodes is quite the milestone, and you've hit it pretty fast. I know when we hit 100, in fact, we're slowly approaching 200 for this podcast.
I know. Congratulations.
Thanks.
That's amazing.
Yeah, but when you hit those milestones, you kind of assess where you are, where you've been, and where you're going. So what do you think that you've accomplished in those first 100 episodes? And, you know, is there anything kind of on the horizon on, I think you've touched a little bit on that, but anything specific that you want to kind of do going forward?
Yeah, well, I definitely want to be as comprehensive as I can be in terms of women judges, especially appellate judges. So I'll continue to, you know, move towards my goal at the state level to have, you know, every woman on every state Supreme Court represented. I'm up to 32 states so far, so I'm very close to that particular goal. And some courts have many, many women, like the Michigan Supreme Court or the Washington State Supreme Court. Both of them are disproportionately female at this point, which is exciting. And to have many members of the court, you know, of each court interviewed is really fun. So that's definitely the goal. And then as many more federal appellate judges and potentially U.S. Supreme Court justices as I can entice to be on the program would be great. So I definitely want to fill that out. But I'm also really interested in this idea of, you know, other unique journeys and different approaches to practice, which is why I reached out to people like Ashley Heard, like Laura Frederick, who's also really big online and came from in-house. I just think those are interesting stories. They're interesting stories about how you can grow your business as a lawyer also, that there's still an online component that's quite strong, that's changed, I think, in the last few years and made their careers, their businesses possible at this point. And yeah, just keep continuing to think outside the box in terms of who might be interesting. I've also started to talk to those who are not in the legal field, women executives, either women who have law degrees but are now CEOs or, you know, in other capacities in business, or even those like Heidi Zuckerman, who's the new leader of the Orange County Museum of Art at a time when they have a brand new building. It's a whole new change for the level at which the museum is operating. If there's something to learn from someone like that. So I'm branching out beyond law to say, what can we bring from other disciplines that would be of interest or like a new thought for women in the law too?
Yeah. Now you mentioned something about Michigan and Washington having a disproportionate share of women that are on their Supreme Court bench, I imagine. Is there a reason, and can whatever's happening there be replicated in other states?
Well, I think there's an intention. Yeah, I mean, I think there's an intention and desire to diversify the courts in those states. I mean, there's a really interesting story in Washington. Well, there are a couple of really great stories. Justice Whitener and Justice Montoya Lewis from that court both have amazing personal stories. But I'm thinking of Montoya Lewis, who was a tribal court judge previously for several different tribes. And I think, well, that is not your typical, you know, feeder path
right.
to a state Supreme Court usually.
Yeah.
But because of that, it's diversifying not just gender and but experiences. And it was really remarkable to talk to her because she's extremely sensitive to culture, extremely sensitive to the community in decision making. And I think that is something that she's clearly brought with her from the tribal court experience. And that's a different approach to how you think about the impact of your decisions and what you're doing on the court. So it just adds another layer to things. And she's got a beautiful, amazing story, super touching.
MC, you asked your guests a series of lightning round questions. Can you share those with us? And can you share some of the best answers you've gotten?
Oh my gosh, yes, I do the lightning round questions. In fact, I was on somebody's podcast and they turned the lightning round questions around to me. And I thought, I should be more compassionate to my guests.
You're like, no, that's not how this goes.
What? You don't have an answer? And I'm like, ooh, what? That's not easy. Yeah. So I ask things like, what talent or what skill do you not have that you wish you did have? Ask them about their favorite authors. That's really illuminating, whether they continue to read, whether they're really traditional, Jane Austen or something like that, or whether they like escapism and legal thrillers and things like that, John Grisham. And from that, there's actually a really good book list now from
cool.
From them. And then my favorite.
Is that published up?
No, I'm going to put it together, though.
Yeah, you
That's
should do that.
Because there's some common ones, but then there's some unusual ones. Poetry. So it's just interesting to see what people's interests are, too. historical fiction, biographies. I think it's that question in particular is really telling about someone, their personal aspects. And that's really one of the, at least with the judges in particular, I was focused on, or I noticed happening, was that you really got to know them as people to some degree. And that is, I think, something that is beneficial because people don't think about judges as people. They are. They're fully rounded people. And it's neat to get that insight, into them. And then the last two questions that I usually ask, which I also really like, they're kind of telling, is, who would you invite to a dinner party? Like any, alive, not alive, whoever you want, whatever collection of people. That's really interesting. Some people just say, my family or my grandmother, who's not with us and all this stuff, which is kind of very sweet. And then others is like an interesting combination of a bunch of historical figures. And that's interesting in itself. And then, who's your hero in real life? And what is your motto if you have one? So those are the motto one's a good way to close it out. Sometimes people don't have mottos, but sometimes they do. And it's a really interesting, nice little bow on things.
Cool. That is a good way to do it. So Marlene, who would you invite to a dinner party?
All right. So I was thinking about this while she was saying it. And it's like, okay, so I have to have two dinner parties because I can't follow the rules.
Okay.
So, I would have my grandparents, at a party, and probably my great grandparents at a party, but then I'd have a separate party. And I was thinking about it and I haven't actually come up with the names yet. So I was busy on the grandparents, but what about you, Greg?
Oh, that was a quick way to not answer and then spin
yeah,
it to me.
How do you like that? That's right.
Yeah, you're great.
Since, like, since you put me on the spot, go ahead.
Yeah, actually, I was thinking about it while listening to MC's podcast because...
Do they have to be real?
Yeah, I would say that.
Okay, they have to be real people. Okay.
not
like characters or anything?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, not characters, but they don't need to be... currently on this planet.
Yeah, I would say I would love to talk with Thurgood Marshall. Having gone to OU and having he worked to not just desegregate OU, but also to allow women to come in as well. So it was and I understand, especially as he got older, he was never super friendly. So I can imagine it would be an uncomfortable dinner, but it would be one I think that it would be quite an experience to listen to someone like that and hear their take on how they face the world. So that would be my choice.
All right. I came up with some
All
people.
Right.
So I had enough time. So I was like, I thought about Chrissy Hynde and Deborah Harry and, various women sort of in the music and art scene from the late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah, that sounds right up your alley. So music
That'd
and fashion.
That'd be fun.
Yeah, it was like, oh, that would be really cool. Mm-hmm. Joan Jett.
Yeah, Joan Jett.
All right. Well, we don't have anything as cool as your speed round of a lightning round of questions, but we do ask our crystal ball question here. So that's our little corner.
That's our closer.
Yeah. So, MC, we're going to ask you, what do you think are some challenges or some changes, especially for women in the legal industry over the next 2 to 5 years or so?
I think two things. What's really interesting is that starting the podcast, I wanted to celebrate people and what they'd accomplished, but I was also aware of the challenges, having been in law practice for over 30 years. I'm actually a little bit more optimistic having done the podcast than I was before I started because of the range of ways that women are impacting the law and really outside the law with their legal degrees. I'm really kind of excited about where things can go, where the innovation can go, where the creativity can go, and that so many, especially newer lawyers, they don't feel constrained by a particular setting to do it. And I think that the pandemic has impacted that as well. The platform of, a big law firm is still important, but it's not a prerequisite to accomplishing certain things. And when you're innovating, it may actually be, slow things down. So that's a sense of optimism. I think I have a bit more optimism about the range of impact of women. Also, I think I know there's a lot of this sense about now debating work from home or not, and, different ways of, are we going back to being all in one office, and how does that impact women in particular? And I think really that I don't think the question is remote or virtual versus in person. I think it's really more about like people-centered. If you're focused on your people and what they want or need at any particular time, and because they're people, those can change, we change over time and we grow and we have different needs. If you're people-centric, then you're going to accomplish a lot more because you're going to be bringing things out in your people that are going to maximize their potential and their skills. And people want to stay when they're treated that way. So I think that really is kind of the debate, and it may evolve that way instead of just this, strict, are we in person or not? I think there's something bigger going on there.
I wanted to ask, and we can do this as a cold open or whatever, but it's like, I want to ask about mottos.
You want to ask about mottos?
I do want to ask about mottos. It's like, do you have a motto, MC?
Oh my gosh, you can ask me this. Yeah. I think about, my mom's, notes to me that she's done throughout my career. And, I kind of think of those in the motto category in a way.
Words to live by.
They're really simple, but there's like a lot in them. So I think together, make this the best day ever, which is kind of like each day is a new day and you start over and you have that opportunity. If yesterday sucked, it's okay. We can start over and have a brand new day that's way better. And then painting your canvas with your own brush, like the way you want to do it. Like, don't make somebody else, don't just go according to somebody else's dictates or do what their priorities are. Also pay attention to what you want to do and what kind of impact you can have. specifically on the world, that's how you maximize your potential and your purpose in being here. So kind of simple things, but those are kind of.
Yeah, I relate that this, your mom brought this to you, because like the one that I think about often is something that my sister brought to me, and it's basically no mud, no lotus. And basically meaning that you have to apply yourself if you want, you know, the good results in the end. So
yeah, mine's Greg. Not as deep. Everyone knows mine, which is all problems are communication problems.
And that's true. So
that's a good one. That's a good one. Yeah, I should put the mottos together too, actually, now that you asked. I should put that from all the different interviews. That would be pretty interesting.
Yeah. Well, MC Sangaila, thank you so much for visiting with us again today. And again, congratulations on the 100th episode.
Thank you so much, both of you.
Well, it was great having MC Sangaila back on the show. Again, she's done a lot with giving exposure to a lot of women in the legal industry. And I think she's right that there's just a lot of different paths that people can be taking. And she's really kind of shining a light on the way that so many women in the industry have succeeded in just so many different paths that they've taken to get to that success.
Yeah, I mean, I remember back in the beginning, I mean, there was a sole focus on judges, and it is really expanded into a lot of other areas, a lot of other stories that women have to share. And, you know, again, it's one of these types of podcasts where it's very inspirational. It's really great to hear about everybody's personal stories, and it's such a good connector. She has said that to us multiple times, that you know, people have reached out to guests on the podcast, you know, guests have reached out to one another on the podcast. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I love to see that, that sort of, you know, sort of women reaching out and collaborating and helping other women.
Absolutely. So thanks again to MC Sangaila from the Porsche Project for coming back on and celebrating her 100th episode with us.
And thanks, of course, to all of you, our audience, for taking the time to listen to the Geek & Review podcast. If you enjoyed the show, share it with a colleague. We'd love to hear from you, so reach out to us on social media. I can be found at GabauerM on Twitter.
And I can be reached at Glambert on Twitter.
Or you can leave us a voicemail on the Geek & Review hotline at 713-487-7821.
For all the millennials out there, you can also text that number.
Yes. We just
don't even have to talk to us.
And as always, the music you hear is from Jerry David DeSica. Thank you so much, Jerry.
Thanks, Jerry. All right, Marlene and I will talk to you later.
Okay, bye-bye.